Our scripture reading for this morning is John 21, 1 through 19. Listen for the word of God for you. Later, Jesus appeared again to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. This is how it happened. Several of the disciples were there: Simon Peter, Thomas, nicknamed the Twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples. Simon Peter said, "I'm going fishing." "We'll come too," they all said. So they went out in the boat, but they caught nothing all night. At dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. He called out, "Children, have you caught any fish?" "No," they replied. Then he said, "Throw out your net on the right-hand side of the boat, and you'll get some." So they did, and they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. Then the disciple Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, for he had stripped for work, jumped into the water, and headed to shore. The others stayed with the boat and pulled the loaded net to the shore, for they were only about 100 yards from shore. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them, fish cooking over a charcoal fire and some bread. "Bring some of the fish you've just caught," Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to the shore. There were 153 large fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. "Now come and have some breakfast," Jesus said. None of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Then Jesus served them the bread and the fish. This was the third time Jesus had appeared to his disciples since he had been raised from the dead. After breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," Peter replied. "You know I love you." "Then feed my lambs," Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord," Peter said. "You know I love you." "Then take care of my sheep," Jesus said. A third time he asked him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Then feed my sheep. I tell you the truth. When you were young, you were able to do as you liked. You dressed yourself and went wherever you wanted to go. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and others will dress you and take you where you don't want to go." Jesus said this to let him know by what kind of death he would glorify God. Then Jesus told him, "Follow me." May God bless this reading to your hearts today.
Is now and seated. Before I begin the sermon, I did want to say, I mean, you've been experiencing so many different liturgists over the course of time, and I realize that every time we hear a liturgist, I mean, particularly with Carolyn and with all the, like, it's like a master class in listening to a liturgist. They all do amazing jobs, and I'm so appreciative of all of them. And if you're ever in this moment where you're sitting back and going, I'd like to do that, let me know. We are booked right now through the summer. We're scheduled out through the summer of liturgists. But if you'd like to talk about what it would be like to potentially serve as a liturgist at some point, we give you plenty of advance notice, and any of the liturgists can tell you. I provide all the materials, and it's not so hard, but if you would like to do that. So just as a side note, so thank you. Thank you all for the master classes that you provide of liturgy reading, if there is a master class of liturgy reading. So today is all about forgiveness. It's about restoration. You know, the resurrection, we're in the series, right? So going from resurrection, we had reassurance, and now we're in restoration. Because sometimes in life, you have to return to something because something gets broken. Thinking about things that are broken reminded me of when my son Taylor, who's graduating this year from college, was very young, kind of toddler age, preschool age, and went and visited some parents of a friend of mine, and a high school friend of mine. And so it was a kind of those parents that when you were in high school, you were always at their house and always eating their food and always breaking their stuff and, you know, doing whatever. And so you got close to these parents, and some of you are these parents that I mentioned. But so we went over, and it was nice to see them, and also to take my son. I now, it's a next generation, and to take my son to these people's homes, and we were sitting around and having a lovely lunch that they had prepared and talking about life in very adult ways now, you know, because I am much older at this point. And Taylor is just kind of walking around, being really good, and so we're not necessarily paying attention to what he's doing. And the next thing we do is we look up, and he says, "Daddy, look at this." And he's holding in his hand a crystal globe. Crystal globe. Toddler is holding this crystal globe. Now, we know in those situations, you don't want to panic when a toddler is holding something like that. But there was enough of an audible gasp in the room that Taylor panicked and dropped this crystal globe. The only way it could have shattered into smaller pieces is if it somehow went molecular. There were so many pieces of this crystal globe that flew in a beautiful pattern across their hardwood floor. And Taylor was just looking and was shocked. I was shocked. They were shocked. We were all shocked. Here's the thing that happened next, which made it worse, is I said, "I am so sorry." And I'm trying to clean this up. I don't know. I picked my son up from the shards of glass. I set him aside and go, "I am so sorry. I don't know what to do. It's shattered into a million pieces." To which the man replies, "That's okay. That was just my distinguished service award from my job that I worked for 50 years. Okay. But that's okay. We soon left, having done enough damage. Haven't talked to them since. I don't think it was connected to that, but maybe if you're watching, I'm still really sorry. There is no way we could have put that globe back together. Here's my question for you. Have you ever messed up a situation so big that you know there was nothing you could do to repair the situation, and you were sitting around with the shards of your broken world all around your feet? Has that ever happened to anyone? This time I won't ask you to slip your hand up, but I invite you to sit with that for a minute. Imagine that particular time. Can you remember what you felt in that moment? Can you remember terror? Can you remember sadness? Can you remember anger, fear, brokenness? Did it keep you up at night for the next night or two nights or week of nights or month of nights? Does it still wake you up in the night to think about that breached relationship, the harm that was done? No amount of saying you're sorry or flowers or penance will possibly ever put that world back together again. All ages can certainly relate to this. You said something to a parent, a sibling, or a friend. Maybe you broke an heirloom that is unfixable. Trust was violated. Maybe you said something, that horrible phrase that maybe sometimes in the heat of anger we've said, and we just go, "I hate you. Ugh. I wish that I wasn't a part of this family." You know, those are those things. Or somebody brought something back and they just couldn't get it back. Have you ever said these things and it's coming out of your mouth and it said, I can't stop it, or you've received it? That's where Peter and Jesus are today. Imagine that emotion. Imagine that feeling of a broken relationship, a relationship that is irreparably broken with pieces of the world on the ground. See, this goes back, this passage goes back to Peter denying Jesus around the fire prior to Jesus' crucifixion. If you remember the story, Jesus is arrested, and right as Jesus' arrest, Peter was the guy that pulls out a sword and tries to lob off a guy's head but misses because he was a fisherman and cuts off a guy's ear on accident. Thankfully for the guy, but was ready to go, was courageous and ready to fight. And Jesus says, "Put away your sword. This isn't what we're doing right now." And Jesus is arrested and taken to trial. And Peter comes behind, and Peter is at this fire, and he's getting himself warm. And people keep coming up to him and saying, "Are you one of his disciples?" And Peter each time says, "I am not one of his disciples." In fact, the third time, it says he calls down curses on himself and says, "I am not his disciple." Sometimes as we read that as a man who's afraid, right? Afraid of what's about to happen, afraid of getting caught, afraid of getting in trouble like Jesus has been afraid. But that doesn't really go with who Peter is. Peter has always been the courageous one. Peter, keep in mind, is the one that was willing to step out into the boat. He stepped out and he walked on water. Then, you know, he fell in and Jesus grabbed him and kind of challenged him about his faith. He's also the guy that when Jesus said, "We're going to Jerusalem," Peter says, "That's great. We're going to die with him." Keep in mind, he's the only one who had the courage to pull out a sword when the soldiers were coming for Jesus. Now, each time, Jesus corrected him. You know, Peter is also the guy that often heard things like, "Get behind me, Satan," when Peter says, "I'm not going to let anything happen to you." It says, "Let's go to Jerusalem and die with him." And Jesus says, "Peter, before the rooster crows, you're going to deny me three times." He's the one that's heard, "Put away your sword." I don't know, maybe it was that last one. Maybe it was that last one where Jesus says, "Put away your sword. You have no idea the kind of kingdom that I am leading." Maybe that was the thing that put him over the top. Because around that fire, what Peter was doing was not an act of fear, but an act of defiance. To say, "I have had enough of this guy." Because every time that we think we're going somewhere and doing something, this guy challenges me. Every time that I say I'm going to protect him, he says, "Get behind me, Satan." Every time that I go and draw a sword and we're going to fight our way into Jerusalem, he says, "Put your sword away. What are you doing?" Every time I step out in faith, somehow I'm doing it wrong. And so, no, I am done with this guy. I am not one of his disciples. Not that guy. Not me. That's when he turns and he sees Jesus and he goes out and weeps the cry of a broken heart, the cry of a broken relationship. I don't know, maybe you get that. Maybe as I'm unpacking that, you go, yep, I've been there. I've been there in relationships. I've been on the receiving end. I've been on the giving end. 3 days later, Jesus rises from the dead, and the angel says, go tell the disciples and Peter. Why? Peter's not a disciple anymore. And Peter, when he hears that, go tell the disciples and Peter, he knows Jesus knows what he did. Go tell the disciples and the other guy, Peter, who said that he's not one of my disciples anymore. Tell him I'm alive and tell him I'm coming. Can you imagine? Can you imagine that experience? Jesus showing up in the upper room that we talked about last week. And of course, Peter is thrilled that Jesus is alive. But there's not much more to it than that. Peter has already said, I am no longer a part of this community. I said, I don't want to be part of this family. He says that I am calling down curses on myself and saying, I am disassociating myself with Jesus and his life and everything that he's about. I'm done. So Peter, that disciple, go tell the disciples and Peter that I'm alive. Now I imagine in Peter's situation, Peter's just perfectly happy that Jesus is alive, but doesn't imagine there's anything to do after this. So as Peter is hanging around in the upper room with the disciples, he says, I'm going fishing. Why? Well, he's not a disciple anymore. He's just Peter. What is Peter? A fisherman. So he says, well, I guess that's about that. I messed that up too much. I'm going back to fish. I'm going back to what I know. I'm going back to what is familiar. I love the fact that his friends were like, we'll go with you. Isn't it great to have friends like that? When you really, really messed it up and your friends are like, I'll hang out with you. We'll be together. It's terrible to let somebody who really messed up, let them alone. So his friends go, we'll go with you. And I'm imagining Peter's walk to the dock going, I can't believe I'm back here again. I don't know, maybe he turns on the car radio. Didn't we almost have it all? You know, and crying. You know, you've been with those people. You know, it's like, oh, you know, they broke up with someone. Like, oh, it's okay, man. It's okay. He'll be fine. Goes all the way back. But that's when Jesus shows up. Jesus shows up in the place of his most brokenhearted. It's night. It's dark. His friends are staying up all night with him in the dark because that's what friends do. It's good to have friends like that. But then Peter is about to find out what kind of friend he really has. Jesus shows up on the shore, calls out what you just heard Carolyn say, children, do you have any fish? Well, he knows that. It's actually could be interpreted, friends, you don't have any fish, do you? That might be a better way of translating that. And they're like, no, we sure don't. He goes, we'll try the other side of the boat. They did, and they found what they found. That's when John, of course, whispers to Peter, it's the Lord. And Peter gets dressed and jumps into the water to go swim toward Jesus. I love the extra part of the passage where it says, and the others, they just rowed in. They were only about 100 yards out. You know, it's like, basically, he just jumps in. He's like, well, you could have just waited. You know, like, we're all here. But he got in. It doesn't say that there were any words exchanged. It's just Peter. I can just imagine Peter just dripping wet, just standing there by the fire because he just wanted to be close to Jesus. Dripping wet, Jesus just cooking fish on the fire. Everybody else comes. It's still quiet. And Jesus goes through that phrase, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you know why I did it 3 times? Peter denied him 3 times. So it gives him the opportunity to fix it. Gives him the opportunity to reverse it. And then says, I want you to know, if you're going to do this, this is what it's going to be like. You're going to feed my sheep. And your future is not going to be pleasant. You used to go where you wanted to go and did what you wanted to do. You were impulsive and you were strong. You thought that you knew the right way, and everything that you did was because you think you knew. But it's going to be different now. You're going to go places you don't want to go. Things are going to happen to you you don't want to have happen. But that's part of following me. Do you still want it? Yes, I love you. Do you still want this? Jesus, you know I love you. Do you love me? Peter, distressed. You know all things. You know my heart. you know I love you. There's a couple of things I want to take away from this passage that I think are important. You know, forgiveness, when you've really messed things up, requires two people, right? There's no amount of flowers or candy or I'm sorry that's going to fix anything. It takes two people because if I want the relationship and I've broken it, it requires the other person to want the relationship with me for us to go anywhere. Now, I'm not saying that all relationships should be put back together. There are some disassociations that are healthy and you need to have them because that's a person that's just going to keep hurting you. And I'm not suggesting that all relationships should be put back together because some shouldn't. You know, even for Jesus, Jesus is showing up here in this place. He's not making breakfast for Pharisees or for people that just crucified him. He's making breakfast for them, which is why Peter says, you know all things. You know my heart. You know I messed up, but you know my heart. My heart is for you. I got confused. I got angry. I got disappointed, but you know my heart's for you. That's where Jesus shows up. So remember, forgiveness is a two-way street. The second thing I learned about forgiveness in this passage is that it takes time. I love that in this passage, as we read it, she said it was the third time Jesus appeared, but as the passage began, it just says sometime later. Jesus let Peter dangle for a while. I don't know how long, but neither of them were jumping into this restoration and forgiveness, because sometimes you got to give people space, right? There's got to be some kind of space for healing, for relationship, for processing. If you really want it, you're willing to take the time to restore those relationships. Sometimes if you're the one that breached a relationship, you just want it to stop hurting and get back to love, but give space for healing. That's so important. But then finally, do the work. I love the fact that Jesus asked him three times, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Sometimes we have the idea that forgiveness should be like, I'm sorry, and the other person has this responsibility to just go, it's okay. Like, we'll let it go. That's not always the best way of forgiveness. Forgiveness sometimes requires me to go back to the place where I injured somebody and do the work to go back, to rebuild what was broken, to try and glue that globe back together again, and to work with this other person to say, I can't fix what I did, I can't change what I did, but I would like to repair the broken pieces of our relationship. I'd like to go back where we left the trail, and I would like to rebuild. That's what Jesus did. Jesus took Peter all the way back to the place so that it wasn't just cheap forgiveness, that it was a restoration that repaired the heart of Peter and repaired the relationship that he had with Jesus. You notice that it wasn't until that very end that finally, after Jesus does all of this, he says those words, follow me. That was the original phrase, the call Peter, right? Peter, you're going to be a fisherman. Come, follow me. That's how you become a disciple. That's how a rabbi invites you into discipleship. Follow me. So he goes through all this forgiveness, and finally Peter hears it. Follow me. You're now not a fisherman anymore. You are my disciple. Our challenge today, I feel, is in two places. Here's the question. In those broken relationships, are you Jesus or are you Peter? We could be either one. If you're in the Jesus place, someone could have potentially hurt you by their words. Maybe they denied you. Ask the question, what would forgiveness of that person look like? What would it look like to repair that relationship with that person? What's the work that needs to be done? I'm not saying to suggest penance for that person or an obstacle course that they have to go through. But what would it mean to restore trust if you are in that place? Are you willing to give them an opportunity to restore that relationship with you? Or are you holding so tight to your hurt that you do not have room for forgiveness? I think Jesus gives us, we talked about a masterclass. This is a masterclass in forgiveness. Jesus is willing to forgive somebody that in this crucial moment denied him. Now, we all want to be Jesus, but maybe you're Peter. Maybe you are the one with the pieces of the globe all around you. Are you willing to give space? Are you willing to take the time? Are you willing to do the work? Do the relationships in your life matter enough to do it? Forgiveness is way more than, hey, that's okay. But I want to encourage you with this. If we take the time to practice forgiveness, we've been talking about what our puzzle looks like. Integral to who we are as the body of Christ is the practice of forgiveness. Can we be a place where people know that they are forgiven, that they are loved, that they can bring in who they are and find themselves restored? If we do, we might find that crystal globe gets glued back together again.